This, then, would be a sort of personal alternate universe. Ananki, another Greek word, flashed up to me in sleep, the compulsion which determines the outcome of even the gods' lives. There is an Ananki for me which decreed that I would become what I am now, and that weird, unfortunate sidetracking cannot abolish it as my destiny. In which case, I am more truly myself now than at any other time since the accident, which may well be, I am myself in this, the best of all possible worlds. Its heredity, so to speak, over environment, the stars and my innate character triumphed. Note. In the exegesis, one of the great themes of Dick's work, memory, is being reconsidered, if not radically recast. The theme of memory runs from In Milton Lumpke territory to Do Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep to A Scanner Darkly, up until the exegesis. Dick's work has formed a multi-volume epic that might be called Remembrance of Time Irreal. In this work, memory serves as the nexus between reality and humanity, but in the exegesis, Dick's past and future seem to bleed into the present creatively and psychologically, and one feels his effort to make memory not so much irrelevant as meaningless, maybe even nonsensical. It is no longer part of humanity's cosmic DNA. The Lincoln robot in We Can Build You is as human as the real Lincoln, not because he looks and acts like a real Lincoln, but because he remembers like one. Dick suspects that the person he remembers being for the previous 10 years was a secondary incarnation that supplanted the real one that now has returned. If this is true, to what extent is the exegesis not just an elaboration on Dick's previous work, but a rebuttal? Has Dick ceased to be the parallel Proust and become the anti-Proust? Steve Erickson, S.E. End note. Which explains why I still can't spell. It is not in my nature. Whatever all this is, I brought it on. I had been doing months of research on recent discoveries about brain function, especially the exciting news that we have two hemispheres and use only one, the left one. They say that's where procedural thoughts, such as doing math and thinking inductive and deductive logical processes, take place. The other hemisphere, which people in Asia use instead, does simultaneous work, such as gestalting of a picture, intuitive, and even ESP functioning. Whatever it comprehends in a single pattern, and then passes on to the next, without there being a sequential or causal relationship between the apprehended and evaluated matrices, which I guess fly by like the frame freeze pictures on TV in the Heinz 57 variety ad. I had read that massive doses of certain water-soluble vitamins improve neural firing in schizophrenics, better synchronization and so forth. It occurred to me that maybe in a normal person with normal, which is to say average synchronization, it might cause firing to take place so efficiently that both hemispheres of the brain might come on together. So I found a recipe in a Psychology Today article, and I did it. I took what they prescribe schizophrenics. In terms of my own personal life, what happened made history. And I'm sure, off and on anyhow, that whatever happened then, and from then on, has to do with my getting what I set out to get, such improved neural firing that both hemispheres came on together for the first time in my life. It is the contents that puzzle me, not what happened in the biochemical or physiological or even psychological sense. Even allowing for the obvious fact that since my personality must have formed in the left hemisphere alone, when whatever happens in the right would be subjectively experienced as the not I or lying outside of my self-esteem, and therefore not me and not my thoughts, I still can't, for instance, understand why when I begin to fall asleep, my thoughts switch from English to Greek, a language I don't know. All my thoughts and experiences, focusing mainly in dreams, seem to constellate around the Hellenistic period. with accretions one would expect from previous cultures. The best way to describe it is to say at night my mind is full of the thoughts, ideas, words, and concepts that you'd expect to find in a highly educated Greek-speaking scholar of the 3rd century AD at the latest, living somewhere in the Mediterranean area of the Roman Empire. His daytime thoughts, I mean, not what he'd dream while asleep. Perhaps this is another Bridey Murphy. I've brought back to being active a personality from a former life. Undoubtedly, from internal evidence, it appears to be the past, the archaic past, breaking through. But it's not chaotic. It's highly systemized, sort of like the left hemisphere of the Greek-speaking Roman citizen. It seemed to me that the preoccupations of this individual were indeed those of Jim Pike. And thus, if you allow all prior steps in this chain of inferential thought to stand, you arrive logically at the final step that Jim Pike broke through to me from the other side. But if you apply Occam's razor, the principle of parsimony, the smallest theory to cover the facts, you can deal Jim out and run with the ancient material alone, except that obviously it's organized as if by a living idiosyncratic personality, which I often sense behind it. This personality, glimpsed by me as being a woman, holds up the book to me or mails it to me, etc. She likes me. She wants to guide, educate, and help me. Evidently, she's exposing me to all this enlightening and ennobling written material deliberately to make me into a higher life form, or anyhow a better person. Up until now, my higher education has been sadly neglected. She's making up for that using very effective show-and-tell audio-video teaching techniques. I have the feeling that for every word or photo I consciously catch and remember, there are thousands of yards of it poured into me that I do not consciously remember. They take hold anyhow, as witness my busy intellectual research, homework if you wish, the next day. After one dream, in which I saw a Sybil who was a Cyclops, I decided after doing research that it was the Cumaean Sybil who had seized hold of me, and not anyone from present times or the other side. I got a lot of mileage out of that theory, but then I get a lot out of each theory I hold. Treating this as a detective mystery thing, which I have to solve on the basis of the clues, I am struck most by the amount of medical information and advice given me in these dreams. Health, mine, both physical and psychological, seems to be a high priority in this ceaseless nightly didactic printout. The first written item held up to me, in fact, a baby's cereal box with writing on it, contained medical information, among other things, although that was not first. The first was my ex-wife Nancy's handwriting. Then in printing, very small, this. The bichlorides are a very poisonous poison for you. And it went on, dribbling off, though, to say I ought to flush down every metallic toxin in the house. Sleep ease. And spray can sprays with traces of metal in them. This is very much like Ubik, in which Ubik, the force, the deity, the underlying entity bringing on and stabilizing Eidos, form, is seen as a spray can, in fact, the label of a spray can. This is too close to be a coincidence. My first written material was a label on a cereal box about a spray can. A main difference, though, is that my info dump told me the spray can was bad, whereas Ubik, of course, was good. The absolute good of the universe. Anyhow, I rose up in the night and threw out my sleepies and many spray cans, including, in particular, insect sprays. And after that, I wouldn't let my wife smoke. Now we learn that the carcinomic factor in cigarette smoke is radioactive lead, a metal poison. So this information, however bizarre, from whatever source, has a definite therapeutic quality and accuracy. When I withdrew all my psychological projections and became sophisticated, I experienced the universe as being drawn through infinity and winding up backward. Maybe when I did that, I not only wound up in my own book, I even turned the book backward, turned Ubik inside out too. This causes me to think up, Sui generis, another theory. 1. I, consciously, don't write my novels. 2. Therefore, a part of my unconscious does. 3. Novels are composed of words. 4. Taking all the water-soluble vitamins causes my neural firing to so improve generally that what had been below the threshold of consciousness was raised up to consciousness anyhow at night. 5. That portion, active and more highly potentiated than before, and unusually endowed with verbal skills, in particular written verbal skills, rattles away at me visibly as soon as I shut my eyes. It is, so to speak, writing a book while I'm asleep. What the water-soluble vitamins did, then, was to make it possible for me to get in touch with myself, which when most people do that, they get in touch with repressed material in the unconscious, usually their real feelings. All of it inchoate, as the unconscious has to be in order to stay unconscious. But my unconscious has a predilection toward esoteric, exotic, and archaic words, exact and precise ones at that. Much of the printed material I see in my dreams has elaborate annotation in scrawly blue pen or pencil in the margins. Someone has been copy editing it, cutting out unnecessary words. My book writing unconscious has a concise style, as one would expect from over 23 years of professional work, cutting and pruning, looking up words in the dictionary. I have, so to speak, a real pro for an unconscious. It's a fine style, but it isn't mine. I'd never write a very poisonous poison, or as it expressed a vital thought in my sleep once by saying, "She will see the sea." It makes an exact point with no regard for literary style, a higher method of expression with the intent to convey its meaning above all. Therefore, it resorts to such striking enigmatic words as syntonic. If that is what it means, no other will do. And it doesn't seem to care whether I know the meaning of the word or not. If I don't, then I can just look it up. That's the audience's problem. One thing about it, my wordsmith unconscious doesn't talk down to me. On the contrary, I have to hustle every day to catch up with it. Note. It should be noted that everything Dick describes in this passage is only a slightly crazier version of something that every novelist experiences, the sense that he or she is not creating the work, but someone or something else is. Or as Dick has put it earlier, "My books are forgeries. Nobody wrote them. The goddamn typewriter wrote them." Many authors have had the experience of returning to earlier work with no recollection of having written it, or what the person who wrote it could possibly have been thinking. I'm not disputing Dick's insightful assessment of the cleavage between an artist's conscious and unconscious selves, nor am I even necessarily disputing the theories behind that assessment. I'm just saying that Dick's sense of a freely, independently functioning unconscious that manifests itself in imagination and words is not unique, even as he has taken this meditation several steps further than most. S.E. End note. Partly, this must come from the fact that it has available to it my complete and entire memory, every word, every thought, everything I ever saw, read, heard, knew, my conscious memory, my conscious vocabulary. It is only the tip of the iceberg, and yet it seems highly structured, obsessed, in fact, by the theological disputations and dogmas, and highly abstract and abstruse concepts and theories of Rome. As Robert Graves once said, theological dispute was the disease of that age, meaning that everyone in the streets was obsessed by it and had to talk about it endlessly, as my unconscious does. My unconscious is fixated in the Roman period, and that strikes me as strange. How did it get there in the first place? And being there, why does it remain? Once I myself was consciously, deliberately interested in that period. I was in my early 20s and read about it a lot, at the expense of being a rounded person. but my unconscious, for all its obsessions with the theoretical material of that period, is hard-headed and shrewd, and wants everything it comes up with applied in the most practical way. If it shows me the golden rectangle, it does so in order to calm me with that ultimate aesthetically balanced sight. It has a firm therapeutic purpose. There is a utilization of all its abstract material for genuine purposes, for me, by and large. It is a tutor to me, as Aristotle was to Alexander, which makes me wonder why it is grooming and shaping me this way, tutoring me in the exact fashion employed by the Greeks. Philosophy, for real ends, for final causes, as Aristotle would have put it, for something lying ahead and not as an idle pastime, an end in itself. The ennobling and elevating education is altering me, and I would presume that when it is finished, I, having become changed, to resort to the ablative absolute, will act upon the improved character which I've acquired, not on the knowledge direct, as if on enlarged memory banks, but upon the basis of my matured and elevated character. I know this whole process sees ahead because I have caught sight of its clear perception down the web of time, seen with it for a while. It knows what is ahead and acts accordingly. I'm sure it has a final purpose in mind, for which this is careful preparation. This recalls to me my notion that the Cumaean Sibyl is behind it all. Certainly, she had or has a clear view of the future of time. That is what a Sibyl is. Note: Dick's experience of 2374 has sometimes been interpreted as auditory and visual hallucinations, perhaps induced by repeated transient ischemic attacks, TIAs, or temporary strokes. We know that he was experiencing dangerously high blood pressure during this period, so a stroke would not be unlikely. If a stroke did occur, some of the changes he recorded in his personality in 1974 suggest that the neural circuitry normally associated with his conscious mind was reconfigured, possibly in ways that strengthened the connections between consciousness and what recent research in neuroscience has been calling the new unconscious, or the adaptive unconscious. Distinct from the Freudian unconscious, the adaptive unconscious catches the overflow of sensations and perceptions too abundant to be processed through the bottleneck of conscious attention. Far from surfacing only in dreams, it is constantly at work to help set priorities, direct attention, and change behaviors in ways adaptive to the environment. Dick's observation that he had become more shrewd about business matters, more practical, so to speak, indicates that the adaptive unconscious may have been guiding his actions more directly than was usual with him. Much of his theorizing about the events of 2374 could also derive from his previous experience, as he himself recognized. For example, his extensive reading about classical Rome may have surfaced in his conviction that he had somehow been transported backward in time to Rome in 100 CE, Common Era. N. Catherine Hales, NKH. End note.